40 years of peace in Israel. That's what we ended with yesterday. 40 years of peace.
Yeah.
All because of one hit song.
One hit song.
Wow.
Deborah, hit song.
Truly amazing stuff. Welcome back, everybody. It's Chip and Eric reading through the Bible. You knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, it's an honor to do this, really. You think about it.
It is.
It's really cool.
It is.
Thank you for allowing us into your ears, into your homes,
yeah,
into your hearts.
We're like a
wherever
big,
you let us.
A big wet willy for you every single day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's what we are.
Yeah. Eric enjoys that.
I do, right? Get you right in the ear. Remember when that was normal, like as a kid, like to just lick your finger and jam it in someone's ear? Like that was totally fine.
That was a thing.
That was fine. Yeah. It was fine to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, did that to someone today,
right,
you'd be arrested.
That's probably true.
You would be arrested.
So we should not have a wet willy Sunday.
No.
Okay.
Not yet.
We won't do that. We'll take that off.
The world's not ready.
Okay. That's right. Yeah, no way.
So there's peace for 40 years.
Peace for 40 years. Hey, okay. We got to get right to it today.
Then guess
Judges.
What?
Yeah, I can guess.
Take a wild guess.
Oh, I bet somebody did evil.
The Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight.
See?
It's not even like then. It's not any. It's just, it starts with, the Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight. Wow. So the Lord handed them over to the Midianites for 7 years. The Midianites were so cruel that the Israelites made hiding places for themselves in the mountains, caves, and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, marauders from Midian, Amalek, and the people of the east would attack Israel, camping in the land and destroying the crops as far away as Gaza. They left the Israelites with nothing to eat, taking all the sheep, goats, cattle, and, of course, the donkeys. These enemy hordes, coming in with their livestock and tents, were as thick as locusts. They arrived on droves of camels, too numerous to count, and they stayed until the land was stripped bare. So Israel was reduced to starvation by the Midianites. Then the Israelites cried out to the Lord for help. When they cried out to the Lord because of Midian, the Lord sent a prophet to the Israelites. He said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of slavery in Egypt. I rescued you from the Egyptians and from all who oppress you. I drove out your enemies and gave you their land. I told you, I am the Lord your God. You must not worship the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you live now. But you have not listened to me."
Then the angel of the Lord came and sat beneath the great tree of Ophrah, which belonged to Joash of the clan of Abiezer. Gideon, son of Joash, was threshing wheat at the bottom of the winepress to hide the grain from the Midianites. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "Mighty hero, the Lord is with you." "Sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us?" That's the question.
That's fair.
"And where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about? Didn't they say the Lord brought us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites." Then the Lord turned to him and said, "Go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites I'm sending you." But the Lord, Gideon replied, "How can I rescue Israel? My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh, and I am the least in my entire family." The Lord said to him, "I will be with you, and you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man." Gideon replied, "If you are truly going to help me, show me a sign to prove that it is really the Lord speaking to me. Don't go away until I come back and bring my offering to you." He answered, "I will stay here until you return." Gideon hurried home. He cooked a young goat, and with a basket of flour, he baked some bread without yeast. Then, carrying the meat in a basket and the broth in a pot, he brought them out and presented them to the angel who was under the great tree. The angel of God said to him, "Place the meat and the unleavened bread on this rock, and pour the broth over it." And Gideon did as he was told. Then the angel of the Lord touched the meat and the bread with the tip of the staff in his hand, and fire flamed up from the rock and consumed all he had brought. And the angel of the Lord disappeared. When Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he cried out, "O sovereign Lord, I'm doomed! I've seen the angel of the Lord face to face!" "It's all right," the Lord replied. "Do not be afraid. You will not die." And Gideon built an altar to the Lord there, and he named it Yahweh Shalom, which means "the Lord is peace." The altar remains in Ophrah in the land of the clan of Abiezer to this day.
That night the Lord said to Gideon, "Take the second bull from your father's herd, the one that is 7 years old. Pull down your father's altar to Baal. Cut down the Asherah pole standing behind it. Then build an altar to the Lord your God here on this hilltop sanctuary, laying the stones carefully. Sacrifice the bull as a burnt offering on the altar, using as fuel the wood of the Asherah pole you cut down." So Gideon took 10 of his servants and did as the Lord commanded, but he did it at night because he was afraid of the other members of his father's household and the people of the town. Early the next morning, the people of the town began to stir. Someone discovered that the altar of Baal had been broken down and that the Asherah pole beside it had been cut down. In their In their place, a new altar had been built, and on it were the remains of the bull that had been sacrificed. The people said to each other, "Who did this?" And after asking around, making a careful search, they learned it was Gideon, the son of Joash. "Bring out your son," the men of town demanded of Joash. "He must die for destroying the altar of Baal and for cutting down the Asherah pole." But Joash shouted to the mob that confronted him, "Why are you defending Baal? Will you argue his case? Whoever pleads his case will be put to death by morning. If Baal truly is a god, let him defend himself and destroy the one who broke down his altar." From then on, Gideon was called Jerub-Baal, which means "let Baal defend himself," because he broke down Baal's altar.
Soon afterward, the armies of Midian, Amalek, and the people of the east formed an alliance against Israel and crossed the Jordan, camping in the valley of Jezreel. Then the Spirit of the Lord clothed Gideon with power. He blew a ram's horn as a call to arms, and the men of the clan of Abiezer came to him. He also sent messengers throughout Manasseh, Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, summoning their warriors, and all of them responded. Then Gideon said to God, "If you are truly going to use me to rescue Israel as you promised, prove it to me this day. Or in this way, I will put a wool fleece on the threshing floor tonight. If the fleece is wet with the dew in the morning, but the ground is dry, then I'll know that you're going to help me rescue Israel as you promised." And that is just what happened. When Gideon got up early the next morning, he squeezed the fleece and wrung out a whole bowlful of water. Well, then Gideon said to God, "Please don't be angry with me, but let me make one more request. Let me use the fleece for one more test. This time, let the fleece remain dry while the ground around it is wet with dew." So that night, God did as Gideon asked. The fleece was dry in the morning, but the ground was covered with dew.
So Jerub-Baal, that is Gideon, and his army got up early and went as far as the spring of Harod. The armies of Midian were camped north of them in the valley near the hill of Morah. The Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many warriors with you. If I let all of you fight the Midianites, the Israelites will boast to me that they saved themselves by their own strength. Therefore, tell the people, whoever is timid or afraid may leave this mountain and go home." So 22,000 of them went home, leaving only 10,000 who were willing to fight. But the Lord told Gideon, "There's still too many. Bring them down to the spring, and I will test them to determine who will go with you and who will not." When Gideon took his warriors down to the water, the Lord told him, "Divide the men into two groups. In one group, put all those who cup water in their hands and lap it up with their tongues like dogs. In the other group, put all those who kneel down and drink with their mouths in the stream." Only 300 of the men drank from their hands. All the others got down on their knees and drank with their mouths in the stream. The Lord told Gideon, "With these 300 men, I will rescue you and give you victory over the Midianites. Send all the others home." So Gideon collected the provisions and ram's horns of the other warriors and sent them home, but he kept the 300 men with him.
Yeah, the Midianite camp was in the valley just below Gideon. That night, the Lord said, "Get up, go down into the Midianite camp, for I've given you victory over them. But if you're afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah. Listen to what the Midianites are saying, and you will be greatly encouraged. Then you'll be eager to attack." So Gideon took Purah and went down to the edge of the camp, the enemy camp, and the armies of Midian, Amalek, and the people of the east had settled in the valley like a swarm of locusts. Their camels were like grains of sand in the seashore, too many to count. Gideon crept up just like as a man was telling his companion about a dream. The man said, "I had this dream, and in my dream, a loaf of barley bread came tumbling down in the Midianite camp. It hit a tent, turned it over, and knocked it flat." Wow. His companion answered, "Your dream can mean only one thing. God has given Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite, victory over Midian and all its allies." When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he bowed in worship before the Lord. And then he returned to the Israelite camp and shouted, "Get up, for the Lord has given you victory over the Midianite hordes." He divided the 300 men into three groups and gave each man a ram's horn and a clay jar with a torch in it. Then he said to them, "Keep your eyes on me. When I come to the edge of the camp, do just as I do. As soon as I and those with me blow the ram's horns, blow your horns too, all around the entire camp, and shout, 'For the Lord and for Gideon.'" It was just after midnight and the changing of the guard when Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the Midianite camp. Suddenly, they blew the ram's horns and broke their clay jars. Then all three groups blew their horns, broke their jars. They held the blazing torches in their left hands and the horns in their right hands, and they all shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon!" Well, each man stood at his position around the camp, and they watched as all the Midianites rushed around in panic, shouting as they ran to escape. When the 300 Israelites blew their ram's horns, the Lord caused the warriors in the camp to fight against each other with their swords. Well, those who were not killed fled to places as far away as Beth Shitta near Zerarar and to the border of Abel Meholah near Tabath. Then Gideon sent for warriors of Naphtali, Asher, and Manasseh, who joined in chasing the armies of Midian. Gideon also sent messengers throughout the hill country of Ephraim, saying, "Come down to attack the Midianites. Cut them off at the shallow crossings of the Jordan River at Beth Barah." So all the men of Ephraim did as they were told. They captured Oreb and Zeb and the two Midianite commanders, killing Oreb at the rock of Oreb and Zeb at the winepress of Zeb. And they continued to chase the Midianites. Afterward, the Israelites brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon, who was by the Jordan River. Then the people of Ephraim asked Gideon, "Why have you treated us this way? Why didn't you send for us when we were out to fight the Midianites?" And they argued heatedly with Gideon. But Gideon replied, "What have I accomplished compared to you? Aren't even the leftover grapes of Ephraim's harvest better than the entire crop of my little clan at Abiezer? God gave you victory over Oreb and Zeb, the commanders of the Midianite army. What have I accomplished compared to that?" When the men of Ephraim heard Gideon's answer, their anger subsided.
Gideon then crossed the Jordan River with his 300 men, and though exhausted, they continued to chase the enemy. When they reached Succoth, Gideon asked the leaders of the town, "Please give my warriors some food. They are very tired. I am chasing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of the Midians." But the officials of Succoth replied, "Catch Zeba and Zalmunna first, then we will feed your army." So Gideon said, "After the Lord gives me victory over Zeba and Zalmunna, I will return and tear your flesh with the thorns and briars from the wilderness." From there, Gideon went up to Peniel and asked again for food, but he got the same answer. So he said to the people of Peniel, "After I return in victory, I will tear down this tower." By the time Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor with about 15,000 warriors, all that remained of the allied armies of the east, for 120,000 had already been killed. Gideon circled around by the caravan route east of Noba and Jogbeha, taking the Midianite army by surprise. Zeba and Zalmunna, the two Midianite kings, fled, but Gideon chased them down and captured all their warriors. After this, Gideon returned from the battle by way of Harez Pass. There, he captured a young man from Succoth and demanded that he write down all the names of all the 77 officials and elders in the town. Gideon then returned to Succoth and said to the leaders, "Here are Zeba and Zalmunna. When we were here before, you taunted me, saying, 'Catch Zeba and Zalmunna first, and then we will feed your exhausted army.'" Then Gideon took the elders of the town and taught them a lesson, punishing them with thorns and briars from the wilderness. He also tore down the tower of Peniel and killed all the men in the town. Then Gideon asked Zeba and Zalmunna, "The men you killed at Tabor, what were they like?" "Like you," they replied, "they all had the look of a king's son." "They were my brothers, the sons of my own mother," Gideon exclaimed. "As surely as the Lord lives, I wouldn't kill you if you hadn't killed them." Turning to Jether, his oldest son, he said, "Kill them." But Jether did not draw his sword, for he was only a boy and was afraid. Then Zeba and Zalmunna said to Gideon, "Be a man, kill us yourself." So Gideon killed them both and took the royal ornaments from their necks, from the necks of their camels.
Then the Israelites said to Gideon, "Be our ruler. You and your son and your grandson will be our rulers, for you have rescued us from Midian." But Gideon replied, "I will not rule over you, nor will my son. The Lord will rule over you. However, I do have one request, that each of you give me an earring from the plunder you collected from your fallen enemies." The enemies being Ishmaelites, they all wore gold earrings. "Gladly," they replied. They spread out a cloak, and each one threw in a gold earring that he'd gathered from the plunder. The weight of the gold earrings was 43 pounds, not including the royal ornaments and pendants, the purple clothing worn by the kings of Midian, or the chains around the necks of their camels. Gideon, that's a funny picture. Gideon made a sacred ephod from the gold and put it in Orpha, his hometown. But soon all the Israelites prostituted themselves by worshiping it and became a trap for Gideon and his family.
That is the story of how the people of Israel defeated Midian, which never recovered. Throughout the rest of Gideon's lifetime, about 40 years, there was peace in the land. Then Gideon, son of Joash, returned home. He had 70 sons born to him, for he had many wives. He also had a concubine in Shechem who gave birth to a son, whom he named Abimelech. Gideon died when he was very old, and he was buried in the grave of his father Joash at Ophrah in the land of the clan of Abiezer.
Okay, that's our reading.
You know, you're going to end up with a bunch of wives if you start wearing those camel chains around. I just looking pictured, like a baller.
I just pictured a camel chain.
With the with some sick sunglasses and like a sideways hat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gee. There's a thing now in college football. It's called the turnover chain. And there's this huge gold chain with a big, some sort of pendant or whatever they choose to put on it. And whoever gets a turnover or whatever, everybody goes over on the side and then puts it on. So I just pictured a camel with a
big... Camel plays.
It's just a weird thing I thought about. It's crazy.
Camel playing good D out there.
Yes.
All right. Well, that was a long one. So let's get to it. What's this tell us about God? What's this tell us about us?
Yep. Again, you can see this throughout, but I'm going to mention it here. It's a good place for it. God is patient. He has a long fuse with his people. Mm. He is patient. Yes, he's going to judge, and he does. And he's going to have them pay the price, and they will. But he's also patient. I mean, this is over and over and over and over again, multiple times. So we see here the long fuse of God throughout this ordeal. And I'm thankful for God's patience. I'm thankful that he has a long fuse. I'm also thankful for his discipline, even though I don't like it. And I always don't love it, but I need it. But God is patient.
Yeah.
We see that here and throughout the Judges.
I agree with that. Here's something this tells me about us. We should depend upon God, not upon the odds. So Gideon's got 32,000 guys with him. Those are the odds.
Yeah.
Then Gideon's got 10,000 guys with him. Those are the odds.
Yeah.
Then Gideon's got 300 guys with him. Those are the odds.
Huh.
If he depended on the odds,
yeah,
he would have lost with 32,000 people.
Right.
But by depending on God, he won with 300 people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we got to not depend on the odds.
No.
Instead, we need to depend on God.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And many times we see throughout Scripture here, God loves it when the odds are against us.
Oh, yeah.
Because he shows up.
Yeah.
And we need him.
Exactly.
And he gets the glory for it. So if the odds are against you, I mean, that's part of the takeaway today. It's not a bad thing. Could be a good thing, God thing,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you depend upon him. What does Paul say? When I'm weak, I become strong.
Yeah, yeah.
God's were against him, mm-hmm. you know, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if anything.
It's better than okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's better than
great.
Okay. Because when the odds were not, I mean, they were still against him.
Yeah.
Right, 120,000 sure. right. versus... you know, 32,000 or whatever mm-hmm. it is, 135,000 versus 100 or versus 32,000. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, the odds are still against you.
Sure.
But he probably felt a lot more confident at that point
yeah.
than at 10,000 and a lot more confident at that point than at 300. But the reality is, like, if we look like underdogs on paper, that is exactly where God wants us.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly where God wants mm-hmm. us, because then we can't take credit for our victories.
No.
Right. We give credit for our victories. And so I just think that's exciting. I think that's cool. Okay, so, I mean, I think you get two different takeaways from two different things, right? So, like, God is extremely patient. So what do we do with that? What's a good takeaway for that? I think worshiping him for that is a big one, right?
Yeah,
like, recognizing it and being grateful. Yeah, yeah.
So thankful. And I wouldn't, I mean, don't take it for granted. And don't take advantage of them, but be thankful for it and really kind of, I don't know what word I'm looking for here, but soak it up, mm-hmm. you know, appreciate it, I guess. That's what I'm looking for. Appreciate his patience, you know, with you, but don't like...
exploit it. Or...
Yeah, yeah, don't exploit it. But appreciate it and be thankful for it. Allow it to motivate us
mm-hmm.
To get some things right that we need to get right. They need to get a lot right, and we do too.
Yeah, and I think emulate it too, right? Like, God's been patient with you, mm-hmm. so you should be patient with others,
yeah.
right? And have that understanding. And then I think for, like, the odds, right? Like, don't put things off until you think you've got better odds of success. If God is telling you to do something, or God has told you to do something in your life, in the Word, like if you feel like God is leading you to do something, don't wait till the odds line up, right? So, you know, I think about like this church plant that we're talking about at our level, right? And just you know, thinking about that and thinking about building a team around it, it's like, okay, we need to wait till we have just the right people and just the right. It's like, if God's telling us to do it, God's going to do it, yeah. You know? And I think we just have, and that could be anything in your life. You sure. There could be any number of things that God is telling you to do. Yeah. And maybe you're saying, okay, well, I need to do this first or get this step down first or whatever. But the reality is, if God's telling you to do it, then He's the one who's going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we have to worry about the odds.
No. No, we do have to pay close attention on what we do or don't do.
Yeah.
You know, as we go towards His will and His plan. But yeah, the odds.
Yeah. If he's with us, no one can be against us.
Yeah.
So
it's good.
So yeah, make sure He's with you. And then go get it done.
Make sure you're with Him too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Good stuff.
All right.
Thank you for joining us today.
Yes. You're welcome.
Judges.
Yeah.
A lot of good stories. Interesting. A lot of violence. Tent peg through someone's head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you.
Wow. It's true.
It's gross.
I am disappointed that guys with as cool of names as Oreb and Zeeb have to be bad guys. Like, why couldn't they be good guys? You know what I mean? Then we could be, like, preaching sermons like, you know, like, David was a man after God's own heart. But Oreb and Zeeb were just titans of the faith. Instead...
Yep. They're bad guys.
They're bad guys. Not even worth having camel chains for.
Nope.
All right, bye.
Never. Okay. Yeah.
The rant over. Bye.